Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody
fray. Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. Why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 56 of the Handgun World Show. It's my pleasure to bring this to you while I'm driving again, doing my typical thing of traveling to do my sales job. And I just had a listener recently email me, wanted me to explain to him how I do these podcasts while I'm driving. So I'll get into that. But anyway, if you are tuning in for the first time, I want you to know this is a practical, common sense firearms podcast. I don't get real technical. You know, I'm not going to tell you how to trick out your AR-15 or how to make your 1911 shoot inch and a half groups, because I don't know that stuff. I'm just a regular guy. I'm not a gunsmith. I'm not ex-military. I'm not ex-law enforcement. Not a combat trainer. Just a private citizen living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area of Texas, and I just believe strongly in my Second Amendment rights. So you get personal, practical experience from me. I'm just a Yankee with a gun. That's it. Now, you might say, well, what do you mean, Yankee? You live in Dallas. I was born in New York City. I was raised in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's my home. I'm a cheesehead. Go Packers. And I've never heard of a guy named Brett Favre. I don't know who he is. Anyway, I'm a Yankee, but I transplanted to the Dallas-Fort Worth area in 1993. Thank God for Texas. God bless Texas, because we are a gun-friendly state, and that's great. Anyway, as you are tuning in, I'm going to talk about some listener feedback in this show for the first half. And then the second half, I want to talk about shooting as a family activity, shooting as a family sport. I have a lot of strong beliefs that I think it's a great way for families to get together. And I have an audio soundbite in the second half of this podcast. It's from another interview that I just recently put out. I had a chance to interview a lady who's very influential, and as a matter of fact, she has some very, very good insights as to women and firearms and making it a family sport. And I've got some good ideas that I want to share with you of my own on that. But that's the second half. The first half, I've been getting a lot of emails lately. And ever since Eric from the Handgun Podcast talked about my show, I'm getting a lot of emails, a lot of new listeners. Thank you much, very much, Eric. If any of you who have been listening to the Handgun World Show have not been listening to Eric Shelton's Handgun Podcast, you need to listen to his show as well. HandgunPodcast.com. I highly recommend it. Anyway, let's go ahead and get into listener feedback. I had one listener email me recently, and he said, "Hey, Bob," he says, "it looks like the Smith & Wesson Sigma and the M&P got drunk one night and produced a new little one called the Self-Defense lineup." And so he sent me a link. I guess there's a new gun by Smith & Wesson out there called the Self-Defense series. And he's right. He's right. It does look like a Sigma and an M&P went out on a date, had too many beers, hopped in the sack, and now all of a sudden the Self-Defense lineup has mysteriously popped its head. Gee, I wonder how that happened. The frame looks like a Smith & Wesson Sigma, and the slide looks like an M&P. Now, it seems like it might be a risky move for Smith & Wesson. That's just my opinion, all right? And folks, you know what? Hey, my opinion is going to come out in this show. I know I got a lot of new listeners recently, and I got to tell you, I get a little bit opinionated. All right? I'm not going to get offensive. I'm very respectful of everybody's opinions. But hey, mine jumps out, take the best, leave the rest. If you like something I say, great. And if you don't, send me a comment and trash me if you want. I don't care. I'm a big boy. I'm grown up. I can handle it. I'm sitting here eating my organic beef jerky while I'm driving down the road, and I'm very secure. I dropped my junk food habit, folks. So now I'm reduced to the organic beef jerky. Anyway, he says that, this listener says, "I can only hope that it has the same price tag of the Sigma, but with the M&P trigger and the M&P quality." Apparently it has tritium, a tritium front sight right out of the box. You know, I got to tell you, Smith & Wesson has a winner with the M&P line. They do, and I have no idea why they've come out with this gun. But, you know, hey, one of the other things I'm not is I'm not a gun manufacturer. So I'm not going to try to second-guess these guys. You know, Smith & Wesson's been around since dirt, right? So maybe they know what they're doing. Of course, you know, their history with semi-automatics was not very good. Their revolvers are just simply outstanding. And maybe this is going to be a winter pistol, too. But, man, I wish they would have just... My personal opinion is I wish Smith & Wesson would have expanded their M&P lineup a little bit more. Maybe created some different sizes. See, one of the things I don't like about the full-size M&P is it's actually smaller than a full-size Glock or full-size XD. But it's bigger than a Glock 19. And then you take their M&P 9 Compact, and that gun is bigger than a Glock 26, but smaller than a Glock 19 with less capacity than the Glock 19. So, you know, Smith & Wesson M&P's sizes are a little weird, but that's okay. And then, of course, they got their Pro Series, and the Pro Series is their competition series, and that's more like a Glock 34, which is good. So I'm going to try to refrain from being overly critical on Smith & Wesson's new self-defense lineup, but to the listener who sent me that, thank you very much. You know, folks, this is your show. It's not mine. You know, like I said, I'm just the guy behind the microphone. So all these comments, that you're sending me, these are great. Thank you. Appreciate it. This helps me formulate the show to what you want to hear. And if you're sending me these emails, I have to assume that it's what you want to hear. So keep the emails coming, folks. I love it. Feel free to go on to handgunworld.com and put some comments up there. Also, feel free to go on iTunes, rate the show, send me a review. I would love that. Okay? Another email I want to tell you about. Another listener emailed me, and he said, one of the things that he put in his email, he says, Bob, I'd be interested to know in what microphone you have and what MP3 digital recorder that you use to do the show. He said, I've noticed that you say in your podcast many times you're driving while you're recording the show. How do you make it sound so good? He said the sound quality is very good, and he wants to know, what do I drive, a Rolls Royce or something? And, folks, I use just a cheap little Dynex headset. It's a gaming headset, and I use a Sony digital recorder, and it records an MP3. I had to play around with the settings of this thing. If you go back and listen to some of my earlier podcasts, ooh, man, sound quality wasn't that great. But I figured it out. So just by tweaking the settings and adjusting the microphone settings on the recorder, that's it. Pretty simple setup, and it's already in MP3 format, so it makes it real easy to put it into my editing software and then make a podcast out of it. So thank you, sir, for sending that question in. Hopefully that was that's the best answer I can give you right there. Hopefully that answered your question. Now, another email that I got. This is a really cool question here. He says, a guy writes me and he says, on your show you mentioned that you are a prepaid legal services customer and that you had suggested using them and finding an attorney who would be able to help if I had been in a situation where I had to use my firearm in an altercation. He asks the question, I wonder how that might look in court. For example, might it look like you were eager and you expected to shoot someone, and that's why you enrolled in a prepaid legal program ahead of time in the first place? And then he says, P.S., keep up the good work. I never miss an episode. First of all, sir, thank you very much for listening. I appreciate you very much. Let me go ahead and answer your question. I did send this guy a private message, but I want you all to hear my answer and my thoughts on that. I understand his question, and I understand how it could be perceived. Like, the reason I've got an attorney on retainer is because I'm one of those madmen. I'm one of those, you know, those fear-mongering people. I'm one of those nasty people that carry concealed firearms, and I must be a bloodthirsty animal. Because how dare that I put a gun on my belt or a pocket and go out in public? Right? That's what the gun haters think. And I can see how that perception could come up if I ever had to go to court. But that's not the original reason why I signed up for prepaid legal services. Now, this is not a commercial. for prepaid legal. I don't make my show real commercial. I don't like to, you know, do that. I'm just going to say that I've been a customer of theirs many, many years. And I signed up with them for a completely different reason. But when I found out that they've got lots of different attorneys, and there are attorneys that specialize in many different things, you know, I thought that, hey, because I almost canceled their service, I got to tell you. I almost canceled it. But what made me stay with them is I thought, well, you know, now that I'm a concealed carry advocate, and now that I'm carrying a gun, in case I ever have to use it, maybe there might be a chance where I might have to call up a lawyer. You know what I mean? Now, something else I'll mention, I also carry a $1 million umbrella insurance policy. And I would suggest if you're going to carry a gun, go to your insurance agent, your casualty insurance agent. I use State Farm. And I have a $1 million umbrella policy. You might want to make it $2 million. Okay? That also helps cover you, especially if there's some big fees if you get sued for having to defend yourself. You know, I'm ashamed to say this, folks, but that's the litigious society that we unfortunately have here in the United States. I know I have international listeners to this show. I don't know what it's like in your countries, but I can only imagine that in a lot of countries it's even worse than the United States. So I'm not going to worry too much about how my membership of prepaid legal is going to look in court, because I could always make the case that I signed up with them for many other different reasons, because they offer lots of different legal services, and I also have an umbrella policy that covers me in case someone's on my property, for example. Maybe my son's having a friend over, and he slips and falls and cracks his head open, and his parents sue me. That's what I've got an umbrella policy for. But very, very good question, sir. Very good question, and if any of you are out there have any feedback and have any thoughts on this, I would love to hear it. Okay, the next email that I want to talk about, here's another really good question. Man, I love these challenging questions. Keeps me on my toes. Listener writes, hey Bob, he says, I listened recently to episode 53 where you discussed RBCD ammunition. I was quite happy to hear someone on a firearms podcast discuss this ammunition. He writes, I'm the only person I know that carries this ammunition, so I've never heard any other perspective or opinions about it. I carry RBCD ammo in my Ruger LCP exclusively. One piece of information that I thought I'd pass along regarding RBCD ammo is that I have had some problems with the tip of the bullet deforming on me. That's interesting. I know some RBCD ammo users. As a matter of fact, you heard me interview my friend Long Range Tactical, and he's never brought that up. But I'm sure that this is a concern of this person who emailed me. He wouldn't have sent it in if it wasn't something that he's been experiencing. He says, I've also removed a cartridge which was chambered through normal action cycling, and also found that there is a little damage to the tip of the bullet. Up to this point, I've only fired 12 rounds of the ammo through my gun due to the high cost of RBCD ammo. Well, I can certainly understand that. The damage to the bullet has been all cosmetic and has not caused any stoppages, but of course the fear is always there. And he also says near the end of the email that he plans on stepping up to his Glock 19 as his daily carry gun, and suggested that maybe using RBCD ammo would lighten the weight of the Glock 19. Now, there's an interesting point. And as you heard in the interview that I did with Long Range Tactical, my good buddy who uses RBCD, that's one of the best advantages of that ammo is it's lightweight. And I got to admit, I love my Glock 19. Folks, you know you've heard me say many times, it's my favorite handgun, bar none. Okay? Sorry, I don't mean to offend 1911 owners or Springfield XD or Smith & Wesson M&Ps or Berettas, what have you, Kimbers. I don't want to offend you guys. To each their own. I just think that the Glock 19 is one of the best, absolute best combat self-defense handguns. But I'm not going to go into that kind of an argument. But I will say, when I pack 16 rounds into that thing, and recently I started experimenting with Winchester SXT 147 grain. And I tell you what, it really adds to the weight of the gun packing that thing full. So there's a pretty good argument for RBCD because, hey, you know, I mean, it lightens up, you know, 16 rounds. It's probably less than half the weight of the 147 grain 9mm. So that, you know, every little bit counts. Weight is everything, folks, in concealed carry. That's why small mouse guns are so popular. That's why guns like the Kar PM9 and that little Taurus Slimline 9mm are so popular, because weight's everything. That's why the Walther PPS is popular. Weight, lightweight and thin. Now, the Glock 19 is not exactly thin, but I can certainly understand this guy's point. Thank you for emailing me that question, folks. I'm going to do some more research, and I've got an interesting idea that another listener emailed me about RBCD ammo. And I'm not going to divulge a secret here, but I have an idea, something I'm going to include in a show coming up very soon. So stay tuned on that. Okay, here, let's see. Here's another good one that I want to share with you. Another email listened to me, another listener emailed me and said, I just listened to episode number 30, Bob, and although I agree that open carry isn't really the best from a tactical standpoint, I also agree that rights are like muscles, and we have to avoid atrophy. I think what he's referring to is, you know, I really believe you need to exercise your rights to conceal carry. You know, it's like muscle atrophy. If you don't use a muscle, it atrophies. Same thing. If you don't use your rights, they're going to get taken away from you. That's why I have 3 concealed carry licenses. For some of you who are new to this show, and maybe you haven't had a chance to listen to some of the older shows, I have 3 concealed carry licenses. I have my Texas concealed carry license, I have my Utah non-resident concealed carry license, and I have my Florida non-resident concealed carry licenses. My thinking, maybe you think it's twisted thinking, I don't know, but my thinking is the more people that have a right to carry, the more power we have in numbers, the more people signing up, the harder it's going to be for the pinhead politicians to take the right away from you. Use your rights. That's just my opinion. And, you know, that's why I say I'm so glad to see we have record numbers of people applying for their concealed carry licenses. You know, in states like Minnesota, you know, I mean, who would have thought Minnesota would eventually turn into a shall-issue concealed carry state? It's great. You know, and I applaud the law that Arizona recently passed, eliminating the need for a concealed carry license in order to carry a handgun concealed. Yeah, it's excellent. I think that's good stuff. So this listener writes, so Bob, here in Virginia, on rare occasion, I'll strap my 1911 to my leg and go walking around in the neighborhood for exercise. Oh, well, okay, that must be a cool sight to see. And he says, and yes, I've had the, man with a gun person call the cops on me. They, of course, the cops, they call in my serial number, and then they send me on my way with a smile. They have to respond, but they also get it when I tell them that I'm doing nothing wrong. Feel free to use my first name anytime. Sorry I'm commenting on the old podcasts, but I'm trying to play catch-up. And his first name is Kevin. Well, I tell you, first of all, I think that's kind of cool. Again, rights are like muscles. If you don't use them, they're going to atrophy. You have every right to go strap that 1911 on your body and go walking around the neighborhood. That is one of the disadvantages of open carry, though, folks. And I'm still a little bit leery of open carry. I'm going to have to be convinced. Still just not quite on board with the open carry argument yet. Don't flame me, and if you want to convince me, go ahead. Like I say all the time, I welcome comments. So send me some comments, tell me what you think about the open carry argument. I'd like to hear what you have to say on that. So, sir, thank you for sending me that. Cool story. Glad to hear that personal example. And finally, here's the last listener email that I want to address before I go into segment number 2 of this show. A guy writes to me and he says, Bob, you're a very entertaining and informative podcaster. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I'm just me. That's all you're getting here. You're just getting the unvarnished version of me, Bob Main, the Yankee with a gun. He says, I'm a U.S. Army soldier, and I'm about to be going back home to Fort Polk, southeast Texas, from Iraq. This is my second deployment to this wonderful country. I already ordered a Super Tuck Deluxe from Crossbreed. Good holster, sir. For the Generation 4 Glock 17 that I don't have yet, I plan on buying one the first week of June from GT Distributors in Austin, Texas. This will be my first firearm, by the way. I also ordered 10 Zombie 3.0 targets from Pastor Ken Blanchard from the Urban Shooter. God bless you and keep on trucking. First of all, sir, this is an audio podcast, and I know you can't see me, but I'm saluting you right now. No, I'm not ex-military, but I'm going to salute you anyway. Thank you for your service to this great country. I appreciate it. Folks, one of my biggest regrets in life, I'm 48 years old, one of my biggest regrets in life is that I have not served. And looking back over some of the things I wish I would have done when I was a young, stupid kid, I wish I would have gone into the military. I might have gained a little bit more maturity, made a lot of dumb mistakes when I was young. Maybe some of you have some things in common with that. I'm not going to elaborate on those details. If I elaborate too much, they might come take my concealed carry license away. No, just kidding. Nothing like that, folks. That was just a joke. But, sir, thank you. That was a very nice thing for you to say. Thank you for emailing that to me. Thank you for your service. You're going to love that Generation 4 Glock 17, and you're going to love that Crossbreed Super Tuck holster. I've got a podcast coming up where I want to talk about holsters like the MTAC from CompTac and the Crossbreed Super Tuck and holsters of that design. There's some very good features, so sir, you've given me an idea for a future podcast. Stay tuned, folks. That's coming. And so, that is going to conclude the first half. I'm going to play a little intermission here. I want you to enjoy a little music by one of my favorite artists from when I was in college, Mr. Warren Zevon. At least they used to listen to this in college. I think he dates back a little bit before that. But I want you to listen to Rollin' the Headless Thompson Gunner, which I like to open the show with, by Warren Zevon. So here you go. Let's take a brief intermission, and I'll be back with segment number two shortly. We're going to talk about family, about shooting as a family sport. All right, here you go. Enjoy the music. Catch you in a little bit.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. Through 66 and 7 they fought the Congo on their triggers, knee deep in gore. The days and nights they battled the Bantu to their knees. They killed to earn their living and to help out the Congolese. Roland the Thompson Gunner, Roland the Thompson Gunner. His comrades fought beside him, Van Owen and the rest. But of all the Thompson gunners, Roland was the best. So the CIA decided they wanted Roland dead. That son of a bitch, Van Owen, blew off Roland's head. Roland, the headless Thompson. They can still see his headless body stalking through the night in the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. In the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. Roland searched the continent for the man who done him in. He found him in Mombasa, in a ballroom drinking gin. Roland aimed his Thompson gun, he didn't say a word, but he blew Van Owen's body from there to Johannesburg. Roland the headless
fearless Thompson gunner. Roland the headless Thompson gunner. Roland the headless Thompson gunner.
Talking about the man.
Roland the headless Thompson gunner.
The eternal Thompson gunner, still wandering through the night. Now it's 10 years later, but it still keeps up the fight. In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Berkeley, Paddy Hearst heard the burst of Roland's Thompson gun and bought it.
Okay, folks, back with you. This is Bob Main. This is episode number 56 of the Handgun World Show. Hope you enjoyed Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner. Wonder who that Roland guy is. The Headless Thompson Gunner? Wow, what a sight. And you notice at the end there, he says Paddy Hearst heard the burst of Roland's Thompson gun and bought it. I wonder what she did with it. What do you think Paddy Hearst did with that? Isn't that an interesting imaginative sight there, huh? Paddy Hearst with a Thompson gun. Woo! Man, I don't want to think about that anymore. Okay, let's move on here. And by the way, I just realized something that I forgot to mention. A couple of quick announcements I forgot to mention in the first half of the show. I am looking for people to come on this show to interview with me. And I know there's some of you out there listening that have good areas of expertise, or maybe you got some strong opinions about something, or maybe you got a personal experience that you don't mind sharing. If you want to come on the Handgun World Show, I'd love to have you on for a brief interview. Don't worry, I'll ask you softball questions. I won't embarrass you. If you want me to send you something in advance as to what I want to talk about and send you a brief outline so you're not surprised by anything, fine. I don't mind doing that, but contact me. Go to the contact page. Send me an email if you want to be on the Handgun World Show. Also, please remember, folks, to support the show. This is not my full-time job. I don't ever intend it to be. This is a hobby. It's a passion of mine. There are a few bills to pay here and then. It exists. This show exists solely on the kind donations from listeners like you. If it's in your heart to do that, I'd appreciate it. And that's all I'm going to say about that. I'm not going to carry that further at all. So let's get into the main topic of segment number two, and that is family and firearms and the shooting as a family activity. In other words, going out and shooting as a family activity. There is a blog out there I want to talk about, and the blog's author is a lady. Her name is Lisa Bedford, B-E-D-F-O-R-D, and her blog is called The Survival Mom. TheSurvivalMom.com. Some of you know, if you've been listening to my show long enough, I also believe in common sense modern survival philosophy, and I do another podcast called Today's Survival Show. Well, recently I interviewed Lisa Bedford, and I made a whole podcast out of it. If you want to listen to the whole thing, go over to TodaySurvival.com. I'm going to play a portion of that interview for you here on the Handgun World Show. She talked about, in that, as a portion of that interview, she talked about how she, her husband, and her two kids use the shooting activity, the shooting sports, going out to the range as a family get-together activity. Now, I think this is pretty cool. And the reason is because when's the last time you heard somebody talk about a family activity, and that family activity included gathering up everybody, putting them in the SUV, heading out to the range with guns, and let's go shooting? Wife, husband, kids, everybody. When's the last time you sat around the coffee table and you heard somebody talk about that? I think it's a fabulous thing. You know, and here's why I like that. You know the old saying that that families that stick together and do things together stay together. And, you know, shooting can be such a great sport that builds not only a lot of camaraderie. You know, a lot of us guys that go out and shoot, and you know me, I'm in the IDPA and I shoot USPSA once in a while. The guys that I go out with almost every Saturday morning and shoot IDPA, you know, we build friendships, we build camaraderie, and I have lots of friends who are into firearms and so forth. It's kind of like a big old fraternity. But have you ever thought of it as a family togetherness activity? I haven't heard too many people talk about it as a family togetherness activity. I mean, I don't know about you, but I haven't heard too much about it. So in her blog, I'm going to talk a little bit about her post that she made. Lisa makes a couple of good points here in her blog that I want to share with you. She's talking about taking her kids to the shooting range. This is what she writes. The kids have learned to respect the rules, procedures, and authority found on a shooting range. No kid wants to be on the receiving end of the range officer's whistle more than once. Actions always have consequences. Safety isn't an option. It's an obligation, and they are all wiser for these experiences. Wow, that's cool. I mean, think about that. Kids respecting the authority found on a shooting range, respecting the rules and procedures. Wait a minute. Did I read that right? Let me read that again. Kids learning to respect rules, procedures, and authority. Hey, cool. What a concept. Hey, anybody out there having a hard time becoming a parent? I mean, anybody have a hard time dealing with your kids when it comes to rules, procedures, and authority? Take them to a shooting range. Seriously. I think that's a fantastic point. It does teach them that actions have consequences. And, you know, she's right. What kid wants to have the whistle blown at him by a range officer? She also says that her kids have learned that it takes patience to line up an accurate shot, and if a skill is to be mastered, it must be practiced carefully over and over again. Does muscle memory come to mind when I talk to you, when I mention that? And they have both shot hundreds and hundreds of rounds with their 22 rifles. Once the fun of shooting is over, our kids have learned the importance of keeping their firearm clean and getting it ready for the next outing. This requires responsibility, attention to detail, and planning ahead. Wow. There's some more good virtues to teach kids, huh? Responsibility, attention to detail, and planning ahead. And finally, she also writes in that same blog post, our firearm family hobby is just one more reason for us to spend time together doing something we all enjoy. You know, isn't that the truth, folks? You know, let me take a little bit of a departure here from guns. And let's just talk about family for a minute. Okay? In this society we live in today, in modern day living, you know, folks, families are getting torn apart way too much. And, you know, you hear a lot of families that get torn apart. They make comments like, we just didn't do things together anymore. Well, why not take up shooting? Take up shooting as a family hobby. If that's something that brings you together and it gets you out there and it gets you talking about things like responsibility and authority and cleaning and planning ahead and taking good care of items and things like that. Boy, if it gets family on that kind of a subject, how could that be a bad thing? And you'll learn some self-defense skills and learn how to handle a firearm in addition to your family hobby. So now, I thought that was a phenomenal post, and it was, I thought, one of the best posts she's ever made on her blog. I will put a link to that post so you can read the whole thing in its entirety. It's a quick read, but it's also a good quality read. And so, with that, I'm going to go ahead and play a portion of my interview with Lisa from the Survival Mom. And this, in this podcast here, in this interview, we talked specifically about gun-proofing her kids instead of kid-proofing her guns. And I asked her about why she conceals, why she is a concealed carry advocate and why she does it. I asked her why she carries a gun. So ladies, if you're listening to this show, listen carefully here to this video segment. Here's one lady talking basically to other ladies, because I asked her to bring the subject up as to why women should conceal carry. So here you go. Here's a few minutes from my interview with Lisa Bedford from The Survival Mom. I'll be back on with a few comments to close the show out. Here you go. Since you brought up firearms, I want to talk a little bit about that. You know, you recently put, I think, the best blog post that you've put on your blog ever. And it's called The Surprising Lessons of a Family Firearm Hobby. I read that. I commented on that. And I'm going to ask people when this podcast is over with to go read that on thesurvivalmom.com, The Surprising Lessons of a Family Firearm Hobby. But why don't you shed some light on that?
Okay. Well, my husband grew up in Guam. He lived there. His dad was attached to one of the airlines that had Guam as a kind of a hub. And he grew up just going out into the jungle, you know, with his buddies and just, you know, shooting up a storm. And in those days, you know, the availability of ammo, you know, wasn't in question. And he actually became very proficient and very skillful with, you know, his target shooting. But when we were married, kind of shame on him, he kind of just dropped it. And he never once mentioned that, gosh, Lisa, you know, maybe you should learn how to shoot a gun. And kind of, you know, in a way, my parents had that same attitude. So even though I grew up with guns, it was never anything that, I don't know if my parents didn't think girls should do that, but it was never anything that was encouraged or mentioned.
Right.
And kind of as things began to change about 2 or 3 years ago, we were headed out of town, and all of a sudden our plans finally changed. And we were about 50 miles from home. I said, you know what, hon, why don't we go to a shooting range? And my husband had to have...
Wow.
He nothing ever phases him, Bob. Nothing. And he just took it all in stride, and he had never heard those words come out of my mouth before. And sure enough, you know, we went to a shooting range, and he chose just a .22 handgun for me to learn on.
Right.
And after that, I was hooked, because to me, I've always been a very strong proponent of the Second Amendment and our rights under the Second Amendment, but
right.
I had never really, you know, done that myself. And so just very, very quickly, we decided that it wasn't enough just for the two of us to know how to, you know, how to shoot guns and how to handle them around the house. We really wanted our kids to learn that themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal was twofold. And they sound contradictory, but we wanted our kids to know that guns are no big deal.
So okay, good,
really
good.
What we wanted to do was to take away, we wanted to take away any mystery. The scene that I can't get out of my mind is the scene from The Sixth Sense, where the boy who sees dead people sees this young boy, 12 or 13 years old, and the boy says, hey, come with me, and I'm going to show you my dad's gun. And he turns away, and there's a big hole in the side of his head.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. You know, because any parent who thinks their kids don't kind of sneak around when they can and, you know, try to find mysterious things around the house that are forbidden is only fooling themselves. And so we really want to demystify guns, and we have done that because, I'll tell you, when we get ready to go to the shooting range, I mean, my daughter's eyes are rolling, and she has to bring a book to read, and she has these customized ear protection, and she goes out there, and she'll shoot. You know, she'll shoot maybe 40, 50 rounds, and she sits and reads an American Girl book. So
yeah.
We've really demystified that. The second thing we wanted to do was for them to learn that shooting guns are a huge deal.
Yes,
guns
they are.
Can take a life in a moment. And
yes.
So... the flip side of the guns are no big deal is the we really wanted them to understand that guns are a huge deal in the sense that there aren't very many other things around that can take a life that quickly.
That's
and
right.
So,
amen.
Yes. And so I think that just, again, normalizing it, demystifying, you know, the whole process, that really I think has, you know, and plus providing a fun hobby. You know, it is fun for us to go. We have an outdoor range that we frequent here in the Phoenix area.
Right.
And we just all like to go out there, you know, maybe once or twice a month. And we've been trying to conserve our ammo because this is too easy to go out there and blow through, you know, two or three boxes.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. So, we've cut down a little bit on our visits. But I'll tell you, I feel that our kids have learned a practical skill, if nothing else. And I know I expound on that more in the article.
Yeah. Well, you know, if I may comment, you have perfectly described what is commonly called, instead of kid-proofing your guns, you gun-proofed your kids.
Yes.
And you just described that probably better than anybody I've heard say it in a long time. And something else I like from your blog post, and maybe this is something that people haven't thought of, so that's why I want you to read this article that she put on her blog here. You wrote that your firearm family hobby is just one more reason for us to spend time together doing something we all enjoy. You know, so many times families are not spending any time together anymore, and this is a survival preparation. You know, if you have to come up with some kind of a hobby to spend time together, and if that hobby happens to be shooting, you know, by all means, in my opinion, go do it, because, you know, the family that stays together is a family that survives together.
Right.
And I think that was, I thought that was the best part of that article, is that it's a hobby. It's another reason for you to spend time together. I think that's great.
Yeah.
And that's great. I'm so glad you made that point. I've noticed in some of your blog posts, you've mentioned that you also personally conceal carry.
Uh-huh.
And so why don't you give us the female perspective as to why women should do that? Because there's a lot of women that seem to be opposed to that. I have my own opinions why women should do it, but why do you think women should do it?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I want to clear up a misconception about concealed carry. And that is, I think for the responsible gun owner, which comprises by far most of the people who choose to conceal carry, carrying a gun does not make you less careful with the gun or more likely to go off on a shooting spree. It actually makes you far more careful.
Absolutely.
I am so aware when I do have that gun in my little holster, I am so aware every single minute it's there. Now, number one, it kind of, you know, pokes into me, so I can't ignore it. But there would never, ever be a time where I would pull that out without giving it a lot of very serious consideration. And
that's great.
You know, as a woman, one of the main reasons that I did decide to go that route, and now in Arizona, you don't have to have a concealed carry permit because of a law that was recently passed. But
right.
I chose to do that, really, again, going back to my role as a mom. And because I homeschool, this has to do with the homeschooling part, but, you know, on any given day, my kids could be, and I could be anywhere in town.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are times where, boy, you know, this field trip's not in the greatest part of town. Or, hey, you know, what's going on over there? It looks like a fight. And so I really chose to have the ability to carry concealed if I ever felt I needed to. And if one instructor, you know, explained to me, you know, he can carry, you know, his holster on the outside of his jeans, and that's perfectly fine. But if it gets cold and he puts on a jacket, it's now concealed and it's a crime or against the law. And so I thought, if I have that actual permit, I can have the gun with me and I don't have to worry, you know, wearing a jacket or not wearing a jacket or whatever. So to me, a gun is, it provides a little bit of an insurance for the kids and I. And I view a gun as the great equalizer. And that's not an original thought by any means, but that equalizes the playing field.
Yeah, it does. Someone, and, you know, I've always looked at it as, at least it gives you a fighting chance.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
You know, it gives you a fighting chance. And whether it's an equalizer or not, it gives you more of a fighting chance than if you didn't have it with you.
I know. It levels the playing field. So
it levels, well, a little bit. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So there's, you know, someone that is, and I've always, here's something else, and it may sound kind of out there, but, you know, most moms, probably maybe every mom, would, you know, have said or thought to herself, you know, I would die to protect my children.
Right.
And one day, the thought occurred to me, well, if I would die to protect my kids, I'd much rather kill to protect them, which makes me sound kind of wacky, but it's like, I would rather see the bad guy's picture on the 6 o'clock news than pictures of myself and my two kids as, you know, unfortunate victim of, you know, some crazy person and a senseless crime. You know, there is no question about that. And so I'm pretty militant as a mom. I'm not the kind of mom that just kind of sits home and just, you know, worries. I don't spend my time worrying. I'd much rather spend my time actually doing something.
Well, you know, I think what you just described is not being a militant mom. I think that's being a normal mom. I mean, let's face it. Well, think about it. I mean, you know, people like to use the mother bear protecting her cubs analogy.
Right.
And, you know, if the mother bear can protect her cubs, and mother bears, they kill to protect their cubs, you know.
Yes.
And anybody who's an outdoors person that has run into a mother bear with cubs knows exactly what I'm talking about. So I don't think you're a militant mom. I think you're a normal mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's great.
I'm normal too.
Well, and that's excellent. Now, well, I don't know about you, but I don't think she's a militant mom. I think she's just a normal mom that wants to protect her family, and she has a right to do it. So, way to go. Thank you, Lisa Bedford, for sharing that with us. Thank you for agreeing to the interview with me not too long ago. And I might be able to bring her on this show and just maybe do a part two and talk a little bit more about her views on concealed carry. So, with that, I have one thing I want to close the show with. And here you go. It's not me talking. This is a news flash from the U.S. Shooting Academy in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that aired not long ago on KOTV. Here you go. Have a listen, and I'll talk to you soon.
Crime is up, and you see it on the news every day, and you want to make sure that you're protecting yourself and the people you care about.
The U.S. Shooting Academy in Tulsa has noticed a trend among those seeking concealed carry licenses. More women.
Okay, you're a little off.
Just within probably the last 6 to 8 months, we have seen a dramatic upswing as far as females enrolling for not only the concealed carry courses, but all of our courses in general, whether it be our competition handgun courses, but more specifically, our one-day tactical handgun courses or self-defense courses.
Well, I kind of thought, what's the point of having a gun if you don't have it to protect yourself? I mean, if it's sitting at home in my desk drawer, it's not going to do me any good.
Director of Training Brian Hill sees the increased interest of women in shooting as a sign of the uncertain times.
People are noticing a shift in this country right now as far as some crime trends, some obvious economic trends, and people are becoming a lot more aware of their surroundings, and that is what we are hearing from our female customers.
Whether I'm walking through a parking lot or going jogging or at work, anytime that I'm alone, I feel that traveling are all times when a woman might feel vulnerable.
My husband is a police officer, and I, of course, hear all of the stuff from him, so I guess my perspective on the society is a little different because he is a police officer, and I do hear stories.
Stories of crime that are driving larger numbers of women to arm themselves.
I hear about crime every day. It seems to be getting to be more intense locally, and I want to be able to defend myself.
They know that the police can't necessarily protect them, therefore they are not necessarily taking matters in their own hands, but certainly preparing for the worst and hoping for the best.
Chris Howell, NewsOn6.com.
Okay, folks, Bob Main back with you. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close episode number 56 of the Handgun World Show. Mission has been accomplished. Message has been delivered. Thank you for tuning in. I'll catch you next time. Shoot safe. Shoot straight. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Take care.
Now it's 10 years later, but it still keeps up the fight. In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Berkeley. Hey!